You're listening to Gifted with Sheila White, a podcast that will inspire you. Its purpose is to uplift and entertain creatives to pursue their passions through their gifts. Sheila White is a film and television producer, author, and entrepreneur. And in each episode, Sheila talks with gifted individuals about their journey and the lessons they've learned. It will also inspire you to make an impact, living your best purpose-driven life with clarity. And now, here's your host, Sheila White.
Welcome to another episode of Gifted with Sheila White. I am really excited for you guys today. I want you to call a friend and tell them to tune in, get a pen, and let them know that Gifted is on the air today. You know, I have a very, very exciting guest with me on today. And she's, when we talk about gifted, she's a person that is using her gifts to make an impact and to help change lives around the world. I am so excited to have with us Mary L. Cohen. She is an associate professor of music education at the University of Iowa, and she researches music making and well-being, and she's the lead author of Music Making in the U.S. Prisons. Wow. If anybody knows anybody out there that was formerly incarcerated or that is currently incarcerated, this is a program that can encourage your heart. There's many people that are going to the prisons to visit loved ones, writing letters and things like that. And we know that it's not the best place to be. A lot of boring days are happening, but this is a person that did something that made a big, huge impact in that particular area. She founded the International Music and Justice Network, Caring Communities, a group of researchers and practitioners from over 18 countries who work with music making in prisons. That's right. Wow. We thought nothing was really going on at once upon a time. This is really true. This is something that has been happening. The network meets monthly on Zoom from 2009 to 2020. She led the Oakdale Community Choir, which with incarcerated and non-incarceration participants. Wow, take a breath. That's all I can say is just take a breath. She has been a keynote for conferences in Germany, Canada, Portugal, and interviewed by BBC3 Music Matters radio show, and has over 40 publications in journal articles, books, chapters, and conference proceedings. She is currently leading weekly music groups inside of the Juvenile Detention Center in Linn County. Welcome, Mary, to the show. Man, I am so excited about the work that you're doing. I want to first tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, because we got a deep sea dive on today.
Thank you, Sheila. It's a great joy to talk with you, and I'm happy to take this conversation in whatever way you think that you and the listeners would enjoy the most.
Okay.
So basically, I am a music education professor who sees the role of music making as so much potential for building bridges and building relationships. The experiences that I've been doing in my career have been using music to bridge people who are not incarcerated with people in prison. And as you described, the choir that I led for into the 12th year before COVID shut it down and the current leadership is not letting it restart.
Wow.
Is a core part of this. We had 174 different incarcerated individuals over that 11 plus years and 136 different women, men, and people from the community, students from the University of Iowa, faculty, staff, other folks that came and sang in the prison. Started out with 44 people in the choir, 22 incarcerated or inside singers, and 22 outside singers. By the time the choir was closed down due to COVID and not allowed to restart, we were at over 85 people in the choir. And the warden at the time increased how many people we do events in the prison. We had a total of 25 different events in the prison over those 11 years. And we were limited initially to 85 people that were allowed to come in.
Okay.
By the time, like our last in-person event would have been December of 2019, and we had 300 people that were allowed to come in.
Wow.
The facility. So one of those folks that came in was a gentleman from Chicago, actually.
Okay.
His name's Dan Colon, and Dan used to do a lot of TV true crime documentaries. kind of seeing like the grisly side of crime.
Yeah.
Then his mother joined the choir as one of those outside singers. And Dan was like, whoa, is it safe? My mom's going into a prison every week. He came down from Chicago and attended a concert and said that experience just completely transformed. The stereotype of prisoner was shattered.
Yeah.
He said it's the only concert he'd been to where the next morning when he woke up, the first thing he thought about was that concert. And so he actually got permission and collected video footage in the spring of 2015 semester, and has slowly been working on a film that he finished that was just premiered. It's a 30-minute documentary short called The Inside Singers. And this film was just premiered at Cinema on the Bayou Film Fest at the end of January. I traveled there with two formerly incarcerated choir members who were featured in the film. Because Dan couldn't be there, his health prevented him from being able to travel there. And it was really important that we were there to support Dan. He won, Dan's film won Best Documentary Short in this festival.
Wow.
So it's not available widely. He is looking for a distributor. There's another festival happening in England, Crossing. I had to look it up. It's in March in England. And then I'm not sure if there are any other festivals that will be showing it. He's submitted it to several festivals. So we're hoping someone will pick it up, like a public television, or if you have, with all your connections with film and TV, maybe you could help us connect to someone that could, because everybody I meet's like, Mary, I didn't get to see your film. Because I showed it. I'm teaching a class this semester. It's called Peace Building, Singing and Writing in a Prison Choir.
Okay.
This is a class that I designed back when the choir was in session. And I had a group of Iowa City students that met with the Oakdale Prison incarcerated students for an hour of class content. And then everyone sang in the choir. So I've redesigned the class. And now these students that are in my peace building class all have pen pals. Several of them are pen pals of people that were in the choir that have been the peace building class. And other students that are from Illinois are partnered with incarcerated individuals in Illinois. There's one from Nebraska. One partner has one student has a partner in Florida as someone that's really into music, just like this particular student. So basically that experience and the Inside Outside Songwriting Collaboration are like little micro communities. Like the larger project was building this big sense, communal sense of caring. That was the goal of the project. And then the smaller ones are, you know, just like little micro versions of it. And like, for example, when the choir started just a few weeks into the project, one of the incarcerated choir members, this was back in 2009. This gentleman said that being in prison, especially hard because there's so much negativism and that he wrote, I've learned from through our practices and meeting people from the outside world that we are human. And that is a very strong self-esteem builder.
Wow. You know, that's huge because you talk about the inside and outside. I want to ask you, how do you go about getting the outside to come in? Because a lot of people, there's a stereotype. They don't want to go to a prison unless they have a loved one that's there. Or a church may go or something like that as part of a mission type of thing. But how did you recruit outsiders to come in to the prison system?
You know, it's interesting, Sheila, is that there wasn't much work that needed to be done. When I first started the choir, I had a graduate research assistant that sent out letters to people in, I'm based in the Iowa City area. It's the southeast part of the state of Iowa. And so she sent letters to different community choirs and other choirs in the area explaining the project.
Okay.
I was teaching a graduate seminar, and the students in my graduate seminar about teaching in alternative contexts were required to join the choir as part of a service learning project.
Okay.
The other folks came just, they thought it was an interesting idea. They came, they joined. We had many, the reason we only had 136 outside singers compared to 174 inside, it was that many of those outside singers stayed and participated season after season after season.
Okay.
And I never had to recruit. People learned about the project, reached out and said, I'd like to sing. There's no audition. That's part of it. People were happy that they didn't have to audition to be in the choir.
Or they have to have a special gifting of voice or something.
Everybody, singing is a learned skill. And so as a music educator, I tell that to several people. In fact, every concert we had, we'd always do a sing-along. And I would tell the audience, singing is a learned skill. If you feel like you don't know how to sing, you haven't learned. And if someone told you you can't sing, that means that person does not realize singing is a learned skill.
Now, what about the, like they say, the Grammys? You got these people that are like Beyonce and all of these singers, Whitney Houston. I mean, they just seem to have a gift, but you're saying a person can learn to sing, not maybe on that level, but get close enough where they can hold a note, so to speak?
Absolutely, yeah. And as a human, part of what we need to do for our own life satisfaction is express ourselves. Some people enjoy expressing themselves in ways like cooking or visual arts or theater or drama. Yeah. I mean, theater or dance. Yeah. And then music is also, as someone, as humans who have heartbeats, who have a sense of rhythm through breathing, through walking, and using our voice to speak. I mean, there's so many elements of being human that are naturally part of musical elements.
Wow. You know, now that's one thing to have people wanting to come inside to sing, from the outside to go inside. But how did you recruit people that are there for different offenses, so to speak, to, hey, come and sing? I mean, it seems like it's a soft thing, you know what I'm saying, when you kind of think about it. So how did you go about getting people interested that were incarcerated to say, hey, join this program? Because I think that's really interesting.
That's a great question also. And basically the way that I did it was I started out by going in and having a meeting where I introduced the project to anybody who wanted to come. I passed around, at the time when I was directing the choir, we did a lot of songwriting. We created like 300 original songs in the choir.
Wow.
I said the wrong number. Sorry. Yeah. That was not right. 150 original songs.
Wow.
And the choir sang half of those songs. So to try to get the participants' voices expressed, we did that. I needed, which I didn't do, I just had a conversation with one of the students in my peace building class about this. You know, if I were to redo it, I would have had a Black musical leader join me.
Okay.
So we could, because I don't have that background as
a. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I needed other musical styles as part of what we were doing. And
That's what I'm going to ask you, because sometimes people are so gifted and they're incarcerated. They're singing, they have beautiful artwork, they play instruments before they became incarcerated. And there's people that have beautiful voices. And that's the reason why I was interested. Like, you know, how did you get some of them to sing? And was the genre pretty much like gospel music, or was it folk, or what was the type of style of your songs?
Kind of a mixture. You know, every season I always spent most of my focus on the lyrics, and to what extent do the lyrics speak to the whole group. We had a grounding framework called Ubuntu. Is that a term you've heard of before?
Oh, yes.
That idea that who I am is how I relate to other people. So, you know, there were times where an original song might have been a Christian song, yet some people in the choir weren't Christian. And so how do you navigate singing one communal voice, something that person A in the choir may not resonate with and person B in the choir does resonate with?
Yes.
And so when those challenges came up, we leaned back on that idea of Ubuntu. So if we as a full group want to honor everybody's experience, then if person A doesn't align with the lyrics of a song where person B does like it, they can sing it out of respect for that person.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
As far as the recruiting on the inside, though, it was really ideally word of mouth, where, well, we would sing concerts for an incarcerated audience. And that was a pretty good recruiting tool, because people would come and say, oh, maybe I'm interested in that. Everybody has a different reason for being in the choir. And there's not one simple answer to any of your questions. So I hope that I'm providing enough context to kind of allow you to understand the full.
You know, I think it's so interesting. I was so impressed just, you know, seeing the projects and things. But I want to go back to how you became interested in going into the system, because a lot, you know, you're working, you're a professor, and you've got your job, you've got your life. why go into another challenge, so to speak, to take on, put another thing on your plate when it wasn't going to be the easiest climb to do? You know what I'm saying? So what made you want to go into this particular division to do this in the first place?
Thanks for asking that. Well, before I moved to Iowa, I was living in Kansas City, and my partner and I sang in a choir called the Festival Singers of Kansas City. And there were several folks in that group that were involved in a nonprofit organization called Arts in Prison.
Oh.
I was super curious about it. It started with a choir in Kansas called the East Hill Singers in 1995. There was a woman named Elvira Voth who at age 70, she went into a prison in Kansas and started this choir, the East Hill Singers. It's a minimum security unit. So the adults in that choir got permission, if they were at a certain level, to leave the prison and for concerts and join a group of community members on the outside.
Okay.
One Sunday, I was reading the Kansas City Arts section, and I saw this choir was singing not too far from where I lived. So I went to a concert out of curiosity. At the time, I was teaching elementary children before I earned my PhD. And I just was blown away at this idea of people singing in unison and in harmony with people from the society that they are accused of committing a crime against.
Wow.
You know, the symbolism of that is really powerful, knowing that the current system that is so punishment-focused is not effective. I mean, when we think about it in life, when has punishment ever effectively solved a problem?
That's good. Yeah.
Not really at all. And so this approach of singing together can be a form of transformative justice. I see it really right now. There's a new kind of a theory called generative justice. A gentleman from Scotland named Fergus McNeill has described it with several other people about the role of solidarity, how crime is, it's something related to a broken relationship.
Yeah.
Yet the system in the U.S. is very much individually focused.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make much logical sense. If it's a crime, if, you know, it's a broken relationship, then how can that relationship be rebuilt? So people that are working toward abolishing the prison industrial complex and dismantling this idea of punishment as a response, one of many different solutions is building relationships. And what better way to build relationships than through music making?
Wow.
And specifically, what we experienced in the research that I've done and writing the book and several other publications is that singing together provides people a space to find a sense of their own worthiness and competence. And it provides a space for people who are not in prison to see our common humanity and for people in prison. So that ability to find that sense of the affirmation in the other rather than the deficit in the other is how I think a community can be rebuilt in a more positive way.
Now, you know, when you're going into the system there, into these to the Iowa, specifically the Iowa Department of Corrections, it's an uphill battle. And so you're going in and you're saying, this is what I would like to do. And there's a lot of hurdles that you have to jump, even though you have good intentions and people are saying, yes, I will join you and I will do this. How do you keep motivated when when people are being penalized from different forms and fashions, and there's, you know, solitary and all of these things going on in the system on their day to day. And then you're coming back week after week and someone's not there maybe because they are in, you know, solitary confinement or some other dire situation has happened because of the punishment system that you mentioned. And they're discouraged or whatever. How do you keep motivated? Because it's not like you're going into everything is good, everything is great, they're being rehabilitated and that kind of thing. And what I'm saying is you're going into a negative situation week after week. And the people there really don't care about people being rehabilitated or rebuilding them for society. So how did you keep motivated to keep going day after week with your work that you were doing?
Well, I think at the time that the project was going on, the motivation was the weekly gathering with people and singing. The subtitle of the book is Listening to Incarcerated Voices, and any positive substantial change or even a micro change that's going to happen in the system must be led by people who have been or currently are impacted. Their lives are impacted, either currently formerly incarcerated, family members, survivors of crime, other people that are professionals in this area of corrections. And we need to have like a dialogue and learn from one another. Here's what we're doing now. Here are some steps to make a difference.
Yeah.
So that's motivating to me, is learning about other people doing this work. People like the gentleman I mentioned, Fergus McNeil. There's a man named Alexander McLean, who he's a British lawyer, and he did some incredible transformation of several prisons in different countries in Africa. It was called African Prisons Project. And then there's another name for it. He was in Iowa to teach at Grinnell College and came to the University of Iowa, the Center for Human Rights. I'm on the board for the Center for Human Rights, and we brought him in for a talk. And when he talked about bringing these people together and talking, what are the things that are happening? What are the needs? And how can we collectively think in a new way? As far as the whole motivation, back when we were able to gather, it was singing together, it was songwriting, it was preparing for concerts, it was creating this communal expression together, particularly songwriting, where an individual would write a song, then as a group, as we're learning the song, the whole group might, we may end up changing some of the rhythms or some of the lyrics or something.
Okay.
And so it ends up being this communal creation, and then sharing that with a group of people in the audience always was transformative.
So
it's really what Brian Stevenson, the gentleman who founded the Equal Justice Initiative, the author of Just Mercy, he makes clear arguments of the need for proximity. Rather than stigma is a distance, having a distance away from something or someone. And proximity can really create more awareness of others' needs, more awareness of our common humanity, the idea of Ubuntu, all of those things.
Now, how did you rehearse? You said you're writing songs, you're learning songs. How did you find time to rehearse with the insiders when you were doing what you were doing? Because, you have a new song and they're on schedules, they have them up at a certain time and they're eating at a certain time and they have their counts that they have to make sure that everybody's in place. So how did you navigate to rehearse the songs when you were showing up for your audience to be able to come in?
Great question. We were able to do summer songwriting workshops where where most of the original songs were created.
Okay.
Then once we would have an end of the summer informal songwriting workshop performance, then, whichever songs really seemed to speak to the choir, we would use those. And then the whole choir would rehearse together the original songs.
Okay.
We would have occasional, depending on the season, we would have sometimes a short songwriting session prior to choir rehearsal, which gave the songwriters more of a chance to rework their pieces and develop their original songs. We use this great system I love called the Liz Lerman critical response process to provide feedback, strength-based process to provide feedback for the songwriters. So all of that was super, super helpful.
Yeah. Now, were you doing live music? Because I saw some of the tapes, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, but instead of just having a tape recorder or having a boombox or something like that, you actually had instruments. Did you have actually coming in? Now, how did that work out? Because, you're getting patted down, when you're coming in. And so, I think this is so intriguing because I'm like, you did something that is not an easy feat to do just regular to coming into any system in any city, any country. It's not so easy because of the warden and all of the, depending on who's there and that anarchy of the employees. So how did you manage to get the music people to come in and to participate besides the singers, you know.
Right. But we had a piano accompanist. Sometimes I would play piano for the choir, but then we also had piano accompanists, and the prison had a piano, so we didn't have to bring in any kind of a keyboard. And the prison also had several guitars, mandolins, so sometimes the songs were accompanied by incarcerated guitarists who would just have their instrument with them. Then occasionally we would have instruments brought in, and we also, we have a fabulous recording engineer, Peter Nothnagel. He's a professional recording engineer, and he would actually bring in his recording equipment and just basically have the list. Here's all the stuff that he's bringing in, and then go through security one item at a time on the way in and on the way out.
Wow.
So, so there were some extra details. That wasn't a weekly thing. That would be like once a season. So we would have a concert in the spring, like in May, and then in December. Wow. He also came in and did our summer songwriting workshop recordings. He was phenomenal and gave us a great discount because he loved the project. It was really helpful.
It's so intriguing. I mean, it's just so intriguing thinking about that and helping to bridge relationships, because I would imagine that everybody does not have a person to visit them. You know, some people have been in there for a long time. I mean, even in the nursing homes, there are people that don't have visitors to come visit them on a regular basis, on a monthly basis or anytime. And so having something like this, I would imagine it breeds relationship, making a person feel more human, because now you at least get a visit. You have something to look forward to versus day in, day out, no letters, no visits. You know what I'm saying? It gets kind of boring, so to speak. How did the insiders, as far as the singers, how did they feel? What was their reaction of those guys when you guys, on a regular schedule, you're coming in? What are some of the stories that you could share from their perspective? Because outsiders are coming in saying, we're going to share, we want to do this, we want to be a part of something great, this is meaningful. But share the other side. You know, what are some of those stories that you might have heard?
Absolutely. Several, and they talk about this in the film, several of the inside singers describe the choir coming every week as their family visit. Some of them just didn't have visits at all. One particular individual hadn't had a visit in 6 years. Then he convinced his family to come to a concert. They came, they were attended the concert, and then they started to more regularly make connections by taking the effort to travel to the prison for the concerts. And then they started to rebuild their relationship with their family through this. The other thing about family relationships is that for several of the inside singers, having the choir to go to would give them new things to talk about when they would have a visit, a phone call, or a letter. During COVID, they were able to start doing more video visits. And so that's happening more. But again, you know, we don't have the choir anymore. We have, we've tried to create pen pals. Like my peace building students all have pen pals. Several of the outside singers have pen pals. Several of the men have been released. I just had a walk on Saturday with one of the formerly incarcerated choir members. And so, you know, we still try to, we've done another kind of an interesting thing where formerly incarcerated choir members that were really into guitar. We've had like a little secret Santa who has bought guitars completely, you know, anonymously to be given to the formerly incarcerated choir members so they could keep being involved in music making. Some of them had never played guitar, but their time in the prison gave them an opportunity to learn, and they wanted to keep their skills up.
Wow. You know, it's just so interesting. I just love the fact, because this is a program that was, I you know, making a difference. Like you said, hearing the stories of the incarcerated individuals, hearing the stories of the people that were coming to visit from the outside, their experiences and things like that. You're just doing this as a heart-centered messenger, going back again and again. Was there funding involved with this, or is it just everybody out of pocket just doing what they can do to help out?
Another great question. You're so good at your job. No wonder you've got such a great podcast, Sheila. You are really great. So we had a couple small grants. You know, we didn't need much money. We did purchase choral scores, you know, to have that. And then, you know, there'd be a small bit of cost to do the audio recording. So we were able to get a couple small grants. Then this is a beautiful story. One woman who's an alum of the School of Music had received an art, a magazine, Iowa Alumni Magazine, that had featured some information about the Oakdale Choir. Okay. So Priscilla and her husband, Gene Zimmerman, they've used their name, so it's okay to use their name. The next time that she got a phone call from the University of Iowa asking for her money, she said, well, I'd like my money donated directly to the Oakdale Community Choir. I had never met her before.
Wow.
She just was curious about reading about the project. So she started to donate to the choir. She came through Iowa, went into the prison to see the songwriting workshop. And since then, she's been back and attended the very last concert we had was the last one she came to. And she made a, they made a much larger donation. So now I can still use this funding for my own research. And like it helped pay for, you know, the travel to the film fest that we went
to.
Things like that.
You know, it's like I said, I'm just so intrigued, you know, with the work that you do. Can you help people to understand why it's important to be able to build relationships with people that are incarcerated or formerly incarcerated? Because a lot of times when they have this stigma, it's like, stay away, you know, coming to churches, then people are like, oh, well, they have this record. Even getting jobs when they're coming out, they people don't want to hire them. Can you explain in your point of view how important it is just to build relationships with, because they're still human and they're looking for to rebuild relationships in a lot of instances because they've been away from people that they've been used to for so many years, often families, children, their fathers, their mothers, and things like that. Can you help people to understand that aren't in this world, how important it is to connect with people that were incarcerated? I mean, I know it's a safe situation in some instances, but there are some people that want to make the connection again, you know. How important in your view?
For me, it's extremely important. And for example, one of the currently incarcerated choir members, I'm in touch with several of them through CoreLinks. And, you know, one of them is my spiritual mentor. When I have a question about something, I will reach out and ask him a question. And he always gives me insightful ideas. We on the outside, without making connections with people on the inside, we're hurting ourselves. We are not allowing our own humanity to be uplifted through these interactions. We're all human and we are not going to stop hurting each other. Unfortunately, you know, we're not going to stop making mistakes. So if a system is hurting even one person, and it's hurting a lot more than one person, there's research study after research study indicating prisons. So for some people, people need the pause of being in prison. For many other people, it can make them more ill. There's research indicating people who work in prisons also have negative health outcomes.
And mental health.
Yeah, and mental physical health, physical and mental health, right. And so, and then there's the ethical question of the money that companies are earning from prisons. And when I say companies, I'm talking about everything from the security companies, the folks that do the communications, like the companies in the state of Iowa. If you write a postal letter to someone, it goes through a company called Pigeonly in Las Vegas, and then they scan it and send an electronic version of your letter to the person in the prison. It takes like 3 weeks for them to even receive a letter if it's a hard copy of a letter. So those companies, the companies that are earning money from food, from clothing, there's just a lot of different ways that the prison industrial complex, and now I've even read about AI being people paying for AI for different security. So the cost of incarcerating someone, and now I've been shifting, I don't know if I said this already or maybe you read it earlier, but I've been going into a youth facility since I can't get into the adult prison, and so I'm learning more about the incredible problems of how we are not caring for our youth in effective ways. You know, there's brain research indicating that our brains aren't fully developed into our 20s or even 30s. So why would we be treating a child whose brain's not fully developed in such punishing ways with the laws that we have.
Yeah.
You know, there are new ways of thinking about how to interact that can build caring communities. And
wow.
The more we can learn from each other, the better it'll be for everybody, in
right.
my view.
Now, you know, I want to bring up a really important point because you were doing this from 2009 to 2020. Something happened that prevented you from going into the Iowa Department of Corrections. So it's not a program that's currently going on in that location. And I want you to shed a little light on that because I think that's important. I'm sure the individuals would still want it, the insiders, but talk about the red tape a little bit.
Yeah, it's super thick. I do want to share that there are other programs across the U.S. that are able to go in, like my colleague Amanda Weber in Minnesota has a brilliant choir called Voices of Hope at the Women's Prison in Shakopee. They've just expanded to Stillwater in Minnesota. Kathy Roma has been leading prison choirs in the state of Ohio for 30 years. Jody Kirshner has a choir at Grafton, Ohio. And so Andre de Quadros in Massachusetts. There are lots of people that are able to go in.
How do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of those people? Like a family member say, hey, I have a person incarcerated. And is there a directory or something? I mean, it's not, that information is just not floating out there.
Well, guess where you can find some of it is a book called Music Making in U.S. Prisons, Listening to Incarcerated Voices. So there's a chapter in there about choral programs. There's a chapter about songwriting. There's a chapter about instrumental programs. It's not exhaustive, but it does highlight some of the different programs.
And name that again, that book, so that people can...
Sure. It's Music Making in U.S. Prisons, Listening to Incarcerated Voices by yours truly, Mary Cohen, and my co-author, Stuart Duncan. Stuart Paul Duncan.
And we want you all to get that book because this is very important. There's prison systems throughout the United States. And this is a way that if you can get your loved one involved in this type of a program, it can be very, very, very beneficial for them even before they're coming out and things like that. What are some of the lessons that you've learned doing this work, would you say, Mary? Because there's a certain skill set. You have a skill set for singing, teaching people. But what are some of the lessons that you've learned, joys that you've walked away with personally?
Oh, my gosh. The biggest one that comes to mind was my sister, Judy. I'm the youngest of six children. And my sister closest in age to me was Judy. She was my role model in everything I loved doing. I started taking piano because she took piano. I started teaching group fitness because she did that. I thought that was so cool.
Wow.
She earned a PhD, first one in my family to earn a PhD. Hers was in health economics, Johns Hopkins. And so I was inspired to start and finish a PhD.
Okay.
So Judy, she graduated to the next realm unexpectedly in May of 2012. She died on her way to an agility trial with her two German short-haired pointers. And at the time, both my parents were alive at the time, and I was so privileged in my life to not experience grieving, that deep depth of grieving, surprise. Yeah. And she died in a car accident. The week after that happened, several of her friends had a celebration of her life where they served pie and ice cream. She loved pie and ice cream, and people wore tiaras because she used to dress her German short-haired pointer, Brunhilde, in tiaras. And then they gave these bracelets away that said, what would Judy do? What WWJ do? And it was find the joy.
Wow.
So I use my experience with the choir for my own grieving process of writing a song called Find the Joy. How do you find joy when brick walls block your path? How do you find joy when you're living through the aftermath? We learned the song. You know, it was a very therapeutic, personally therapeutic experience for me to write the song and then to teach the song to the choir. We're learning the song for the May of 2013 concert, which was themed Mourning is Broken. Mourning spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Mourning is Broken.
Yeah.
In the process of learning the song, we're walking out of the prison with the outside volunteers, and Kevin Coomer, one of the outside volunteers who had been involved since the choir started, said to me, Mary, you know, I really like your song. And for me, I don't think you actually have to go out to find joy and to find happiness. Rather, it's inside. We just need to pause to feel it.
Wow.
And I'm like, yes, I have heard that from so many people. And that was the biggest aha So we changed the end of the song, which was We Seek to Find the Joy, because that was the end of the chorus and how the song ended. We changed the final version of it to We Pause to Feel the Joy.
I just want to mention a little bit in our few seconds that we have left about the Oakdale Choir, some of the updates, because it's not over. Even though the Iowa Department of Corrections is not allowing you all to come back in, give us a little updates on the Oakdale Choir, because you guys are still at it. You're not giving up.
We're not giving up. Yeah, we've got these partnerships through the Pen Pals, the Inside Outside Songwriting Collaboration Project. We've created over 10 original songs. A big shout out to Lindsay Scott, who is a phenomenal songwriter that wrote a song with Anthony Rodd called Over Under, which you can find on Bandcamp. Over Under. Lindsay is Lyndsey, Lindsey Scott. So those little mini partnerships are happening. And then I am now co-leading a new singing circle, name to be determined. I don't want to pick the wrong name, but it's related to social justice. And so we're in the process of kind of building this. We've just been meeting every month since October. We're going to be doing a retreat. If anybody's listening on the call and wants to come to Hiawatha, Iowa, it's just Cedar Rapids area, to the Eco Spirituality Retreat Center called Prairie Woods. Friday night, April 5, and Saturday, April 6, we'll be co-leading a singing, just anybody, y'all come, singing circle, building community through singing together. And then now this film, we're hoping to do a film screening possibly October 5th this year at Film Scene in Iowa City. Dan's mom, Amy, has a brand new book that's being published this year. It's a memoir about her experience with her relationship with her mother. She was visiting her mother after her mother had a stroke at Oak Knoll, which is a retirement residence, and then she was singing in the choir. So the memoir is this very interesting mix of going into a prison and feeling the sense of freedom by singing with these people, and then the sense of the challenge of preparing for her mother's death. So yeah, we're just trying to figure out what's next, Sheila. It's hard. It's really, really, really hard to know for certain. But the monthly Zoom calls, anybody who's interested in this topic can join. February 22nd, our next Zoom call will be with this remarkable man from India. Rajul is his name, and he leads a music and arts program for youth in conflict with the law in Delhi, India. So he's going to be featuring his work, and then we record those meetings. And those are the recordings of those meetings are on the Oakdale Choir website, and we're looking at maybe putting together a YouTube channel so people interested in this topic can maybe find it easier. We'll
Well,
see.
folks, we've been talking to Mary Cohen. She's Associate Professor of Music Education at the University of Iowa. Man, she is doing it, I'm telling you. Talk about the Grammys. They need to give awards to people like you that are doing great things for our community, making a difference with people in prison, bringing communities together, people that care, people that share, people that have been formerly incarcerated, you're still in contact with those individuals. The Secret Santa, I love that you guys have, where you give things to individuals that are in need, that have been formerly incarcerated. You guys are change makers, and this is what our world needs more of. You're fully human, and this is what it means to be able to reach out and touch someone to make a difference in the life of others. I want to thank you so much for being our special guest today. Can you give our audience a way to get in contact with your books, the Zoom, the class that's coming up on the 5th? But if someone wants to get in contact with your book or purchase your book to find out more, how they can contact their loved ones to find out if this process can get started in their area, or if you can help to assist maybe in their area, to get something like this started. So could you give your contact information about your book?
Sure. The book is available just on your favorite bookstore websites, Music Making in U.S. Prisons, Listening to Incarcerated Voices. There are several reviews of the book that are really positive that are available in different venues. Maybe the Oakdale Choir website might be a good place to go because that's where we update a lot of the information about the International Music and Justice Inquiry Network. And then just good old email is another simple way to connect with me if people wanted to reach out that way.
Okay, could you give your email address and then people can contact you through email?
Yeah, it's my name, Mary hyphen Cohen as in Nancy at uiowa.edu, uiowa.edu. iowa.edu. You probably just find me by looking up the University of Iowa Music Education and my name. You should be able to find me that way as well.
Wow, I'm so full. This has been so great. Just, you know, reaching out to people that need the help and coming into a system that was sad and depressing. And, you know, people are looking at life sentences and years of, you know, being incarcerated. And there's not a lot of joy. There's not a lot of great moments to look forward to. And so I'm just so happy that you are doing the work, continuing the work that you're doing, making a difference, bringing music to our hearts and ears.
And I'm not sure how clearly I made this, but really it's about abolishing the harmful practices. It's about decarcerating, you know, about changing. Why, you know, there's no research indicating being in prison longer than even 5 years is really going to make a difference in someone's ability. You know, we need to really change a lot of the prison practices. Putting humans behind cages is just not healthy. We need more treatments like caring, addiction counseling, you know, all sorts of other services that really serve the needs of society and people's, whatever people's needs are, whether they're
building relationships, rehabilitation, all of these things. We need to, you know, hold our elected officials accountable, you know, to help them to understand what's going on and what's happening, and the people that have these jobs, helping them to understand, because like you said, it's a mental and physical complications that often arises out of a person being, you know, locked up for so many years. Well, thank you so much, Mary, for being our special guest. Folks, if you did not hear this entire broadcast, I want you to visit our website at www.road2eternity.net. Mary's information will be on there. We're so delighted because Mary is using her gifts to impact the world. She's uniquely designed and strategically gifted for our world today. And the music goes on and on and on. So I want to thank you for being our guest today, Mary. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to Gifted with Sheila White. We hope you understand how your gifts can make an impact on the world. Gifted with Sheila White is produced by Road to Eternity, a film and television production company.